You know, when you do these raffles, you don't know what number's going to come up. I was real nervous that she was going to say the winning number is 666. But fortunately, that didn't happen. Our next speaker is Alex Newman. And when I invited him to come and asked him what topic he'd like to pursue, he said, okay, you can give me a topic, but it can't be anything controversial. And it can't ruffle anybody's feathers. So we gave him exposing the diabolical push for a one-world political, religious, and economic order. So the interesting thing about Alex is a lot of us, and we know the New World Order is coming, right? It might even be here already. Daniel 7 verse 23 talks about that final form of Gentile dominion that would exist over planet Earth before the second coming, and it clearly describes their one world tyranny. We don't have to like it, but the Bible says it's coming. And the interesting thing about that subject is most of us, when we study that, we read articles about it. Alex is different. He actually goes to the meetings incognito and meets the globalists and sometimes interviews them. And he may have interviewed the Antichrist, for all we know, unaware. And so he does what we would call primary source research. I'm surprised they haven't identified him and thrown him out. But at any rate, let's welcome Alex Newman.
Thank you so much, Andrew. Yes, sir. Hey, guys. What an introduction. Thank you. It's a great honor to be here at ProfCon. And it's true, I do get to follow the globalists around the world. It's a lot of fun. I'm about as popular as a skunk at a party. but that's okay, right? It's good fun. The Lord has put me here, and I just feel very honored to do a little tiny bit of work that I feel He has called me to do. Ephesians 5:11 is kind of my guiding motto, right? Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them, reprove them, some translations say. But then with all this stuff about Jeffrey Epstein in the news, the very next verse, verse 12, says some of these things are too shameful even to speak of. And as you dig through these Epstein files, I mean, it is monstrous. It is satanic. It is beyond people's most horrific dreams. It reminds me of what we read in Genesis 6. There's genetic engineering. There's horrific abuse of children. And this is the reality that we're dealing with. And even a lot of Christians don't realize. Right? They don't realize that what the Bible describes as reality is, in fact, real. So it's coming more and more out of the closet. This image that you see up here, I actually just took this. I was in the Amazon rainforest a few months ago for the UN Climate Summit. And this was the official guardian spirit. I wish I was kidding, but I'm not. They unveiled this big, horrific statue. You can get a sense of how big it is by the guy worshiping, selfieing in front of it. And they said it was a hybrid of the Chinese dragon spirit with the Brazilian jaguar spirit, and so then you get, presto, the guardian spirit of the UN COP 30, the 30th conference of the parties. And I don't know about you guys, but to me that looks like a big demon. Looks like a big devil, right? Forget dragon, forget jaguar. Look, you notice it's holding the world in its hands. What came to mind immediately as I saw this horrific thing was 1 John chapter 5. The whole world is in the hands of the evil one, or in the power of the evil one. And you see the COP 30 across, and you see the little doves flying off as this horrific creature embraces the planet. Really, really fascinating. So this is the kind of stuff you see when you go to these meetings. Now, the paganism has never been as overt as it was at this summit. In fact, they held it in the rainforest in Brazil for a number of strategic reasons. But one of them is because it's one of the last places in the world where there are still pagan peoples who've been largely untouched by Christian civilization. They live in the forest, they worship trees, they worship rivers, they worship rocks, they pray to spirits. Until recently, some of these tribes engaged in cannibalism and sacrificed children. Right? And throughout the summit, constant prayers to the spirits of the rivers and the spirits of the forest and the spirits of the trees, and world leaders bowing down to this kind of stuff. And you know, I've seen this for a long time. We're going to talk about it a little bit today because it's becoming more and more blatant. But these people have it in their mind that the problem is Christianity, and they say so explicitly. It goes back to writings by Professor Lynn White back in the 1960s. This is before the global warming hoax was even invented. But he argued that the reason we have an ecological crisis is because of the Christian worldview. People have been reading their Bibles, and they think man is made in the image of God, and that we're somehow special, that God called on us to rule over the nature and the forests and the animals. How dare we think something so ridiculous? We need to destroy that worldview. Now, this was a professor at Stanford and Princeton and UCLA, a very prominent individual. And so the hive mind at these things thinks, hey, if we could just go back to paganism, everything would be great. We could go back to sacrificing children and eating each other. Now, this is what's going on in these places, folks. They don't always say it explicitly, but I always have Psalm 2 in my mind when I'm going to these global summits, right? It's the nations rage, the peoples plot in vain. The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and His anointed. That's going to go real well, right? Let us burst their bonds apart and cast away their cords from us. And yet He who sits in the heavens laughs. The Lord holds them in derision. Then He will speak to them in His wrath and terrify them in His fury, saying, as for me, I have set my king on Zion, my holy hill. So that encourages me as I go into these dark dens, knowing that God is up there laughing at all their little schemes. And they may think they're prospering now. They may think they're this close to enslaving all of humanity and killing huge numbers of people. Little do they know, the Creator of the heavens and the earth is laughing at them, and He's about to speak to them in His wrath. So sometimes people ask me, why do you focus on all this bad stuff, Alex? Well, the Apostle Paul said it clearly. We are not going to be outwitted by Satan. We're not ignorant of his designs. And yet so many Christians today, especially in the Western world, are totally ignorant of his design. They'll sit there and watch a satanic ritual on TV and think, oh, that's entertaining. Like, I mean, it happens every day. Every day. So about a year and a half ago, I went to the UN headquarters. They had the Summit of the Future. This was advertised as one of the most important conferences ever held by the United Abominations. Okay, 80 years since this horrible thing was created. And all over the place, they had these propaganda posters. They had a big blow-up quote from the Socialist Secretary General, Antonio Guterres. We can't build a future for our grandchildren with a system built for our grandparents. Okay, and the whole marketing slogan of this thing was, we're moving from the UN to now UN 2.0. That's what they were saying, right? So UN 1.0, supposedly, was to deal with peace and security and international things like that. Well, UN 2.0, as you'll see from their own pact for the future that emerged from this horrific conference, the UN will now deal with everything. The environment, education, the economy, AI, the internet, you name it, the UN wants to oversee it. And by the way, every government in the world consented to this atrocity. Every single government in the world. It passed by what they call consensus, which means not one member state out of 193 said, wait a minute, this doesn't sound like a good idea to me. That includes our government under Joe Biden. This was in the waning months of the Biden regime. Isn't that interesting? So they concluded in their Pact for the Future, again adopted by every government in the world, that we recognize that the multilateral system and its institutions, with the United Nations and its charter at the center, must be strengthened to keep pace with a changing world. And so we renew our commitment to multilateralism and international cooperation. We will transform global governance and strengthen the multilateral system. These people spend weeks arguing over a comma. Do you think they put some thought into this? Do you think they're just kidding? Why isn't this on the front page of every newspaper in America? Hey, the UN is now morphing into UN 2.0, where they're going to run everything. They're going to strengthen the multilateral system. We're going to have more global governance. Did any of you vote for this? Of course not. Neither did the U.S. Senate, by the way. They've started just passing these things and calling them executive agreements. So we don't even need the advice and consent of our Senate as demanded by our Constitution. The nations of the world, they're really the governments and the kleptocrats who like to think they rule the world, agree that we will fulfill our obligation to comply with the decisions and uphold the mandate of the International Court of Justice. Right? They're building global government right in front of your face. And yet we're distracted with the stupid bowl and, whatever the celebrities did or, truly amazing. By the way, they're also going to silence you. You can't just be like saying whatever you want. You can't just be preaching the gospel or exposing these clowns. So if you read the Pact for the Future, it says, and I don't know if you can see it here, I took a screenshot, we will strengthen international cooperation to address the challenge of misinformation and disinformation and hate speech, mitigate the risks of information manipulation in a manner consistent with international law. That's right in the agreement. You guys do realize your misinformation and your disinformation and your biblical views are hate speech. In fact, right now, in Canadistan, the People's Republic of Canadistan, not funny because it's true, they are in the middle of passing a law that will remove the religious exemption from their hate speech laws. So now if you were to say, I think marriage is between a man and a woman, right now you could say, well, it's my sincerely held religious belief. Please don't prosecute me, your highnesses. Well, that's going to be gone soon. No more religious defense for your hateful attitudes. Right? If you say your sexual proclivities may not be in line with the Word of God, but Jesus Christ can transform you, give you a new heart, that's called conversion therapy. That's super hateful. Obviously going to have to do time in prison for such hateful things. And this is now coming down at the international level, ladies and gentlemen. All the governments of the world agreed to this. And they're kind of bragging about it, right? Melissa Fleming, she's the Undersecretary General for Communications at the United Abominations. Here she is in 2022 at the World Economic Forum talking about how they're now a partnership with Google to silence you.
You know, we partnered with Google, for example. If you Google climate change, you will, at the top of your search, you will get all kinds of UN resources.
Yes.
We started this partnership when we were shocked to see that when we Googled climate change, we were getting incredibly distorted information right at the top.
That was my articles,
so
by the way.
We're becoming much more
true
proactive.
Story.
We own the science, and we think that the world...
We own the science, all right? And we're going to work with Google to make sure everybody knows it. Can't be having alternative opinions or ideas or even facts. So I ran into this lady at the Summit of the Future, Melissa Fleming. Listen.
Melissa, hi, I'm Alex Newman with the New American Magazine. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about the partnership that the UN has with Google to try to squelch disinformation and misinformation. You talked about it at the 2022 World Economic Forum.
I'm sorry, I'm not sure who you are.
Alex Newman with the New American.
She knows exactly who I am.
I don't know what I'm talking about. Sorry, we can't do it right now.
Sorry, we can't do interviews. And now she walks away. Oh, it's so silly. So she walks away and starts talking to any and every reporter who has a question for her.
I can just ask her questions and I can't. I don't understand.
We had planned this before.
Oh, we did?
Yeah.
We're not discriminating against media outlets, are we?
No.
Man, her staff moved in like this. It was crazy. And she knew exactly who I was. She had to approve my coming in, right? There was only about 150 journalists in the whole place, and all of it goes right through her office. All these people despise us, and that's okay. But you could see the look on her face. I don't know who you are, so we can't talk right now. But don't worry, they're not doing anything suspicious here. Here's the top spokesman for the United Nations.
Alex Newman with the New American Media.
Yeah.
To the extent that the Summit of the Future and the Pact for the Future have been mentioned by policymakers at all in the United States, it's been very negative. We had a congressional delegation last week, had a press conference say this was an attack on our sovereignty. And last week we had 26 U.S. governors issue a statement saying that they weren't going to comply with U.N. dictates and mandates. Is the Secretary General concerned about public opposition, especially among Republicans in the United States?
Look, this is not, the Pact for the Future is not about world government. It's about making an organization of independent, sovereign member states work better.
Yeah. It's not about world government, but we really need a world government. Listen.
Body where governments come together, sovereign governments come together to try to solve problems that impacts them all, that try to deal with problems that have no borders, right? Not one country can deal with the rising seas. Not one country can deal with global pandemics. Not one country can deal with international terrorism.
Right. So we need global government because global problems require global solutions, as the Secretary General says.
Global problems require global solutions.
Right. So we have global problems, so we need global government to solve those problems. Now, before they came up with the Pact for the Future, and we'll come back to that, they had the UN Agenda 2030, the Sustainable Development Goals. There's 17 of them. They said these were going to transform our world. They're going to make us more sustainable. The head of the UN General Assembly at the time, Peter Thomas, said that UN Sustainable Development Goals were the master plan for humanity. And so what they're doing is they're using a three-legged stool approach where you use one leg of the stool is the governments of the world. That's where the UN comes in. Every major government in the world is a member. The private sector, the businesses of the world, and we'll see how they're using business to bring this about. And then the religious sector, which they're also very, very active in, as we will see today. So we're going to touch briefly on a few topics. They told me I only had 7 hours to go through 853 slides, so we're going to go really fast. No, I actually do have 173 slides. We'll probably only be able to get to about 50 of them, so we'll just pick and choose what we're going to talk about. But one of the ways they're bringing all this in is through this idea of polycrisis. And the first person I ever heard use that term was Pat Wood. You're going to hear from him later in this conference. And sure enough, the World Economic Forum is preparing for the polycrisis, right? We're going to be facing all these different crises at the same time. They're going to converge into one polycrisis, and basically the answer is going to be what the answer is to every problem. Give up your freedom, give us more money, and empower your rulers with infinite power. Okay? As Rahm Emanuel
put it. You never want a serious crisis to go to waste. And what I mean by that, it's an opportunity to do things that you think you could not do before.
Yes, you can do things you couldn't do before, right? Now, this is not a new tactic. 200 years ago, Frederick Bastiat, the great French lawmaker and philosopher, pointed out that tyrants in his day were doing this. He said they would concoct the poison and the antidote in the same laboratory, which is exactly what they do. Right? And so now going back to the Pact for the Future, one of the most important provisions, and I picked this up and broke the story in the Epoch Times, was this draconian grab for new emergency powers. Okay. If you read the Pact for the Future, again, adopted by every government in the world, they said that during emergencies, during international emergencies, and they give you a list of different things it could be. It could be climate change, war, economic problems, pandemics, black swan events, something in outer space, things that we can't even imagine yet, regional problems, don't even have to be global. Whenever the Secretary General declares that there is an international emergency, and you can trust him to use that power responsibly, all nations, all businesses, all nonprofits, all of society must recognize this, and the primary role of intergovernmental organs, we're talking about UN agencies, in decision-making. In other words, if the Secretary General determines there's an emergency, all power and authority is with the Secretary General. And obviously you can trust him, right? They say in there, we recognize the need for a more coherent, cooperative, coordinated, and multidimensional international response to complex global shocks and the central role of the United Nations in this regard. It's right in the text of the agreement. And they also say that the UN needs to devise new ways to strengthen the United Nations system response to complex global emergencies. So again, this is not a new tactic. They've imagined this for many years. Back in 1962, the U.S. State Department commissioned a report. The name of the report kind of gave the agenda away. It was called A World Effectively Controlled by the United Nations. Read it yourself. And they said, you know, how do we get to a world effectively controlled by the UN? The guy who wrote it, Lincoln Bloomfield, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, big-time globalist, he said that with the present organic trends, it would take hundreds of years before we could have a true global government. But he said we could accelerate this process using a grave crisis or war sufficient to bring about a sudden transformation in national attitudes. Okay. He says we could accelerate this process using a crisis, a war, or a brink of war situation so grave or commonly menacing that deeply rooted attitudes and practices are sufficiently shaken to open the possibility of a revolution in world political arrangements. They've been thinking about this for longer than most of us have been on this planet.
Now, they've seen this in action. World War I fundamentally transformed the entire world, right? It gave birth to the early institutions of global governance, things like the League of Nations. It resulted for the first time in most American children being educated primarily by government rather than by parents and the church. World War II, of course, gave birth to the United Nations, the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the structure that eventually became the European Union. Back then it was called the Coal and Steel Community, and that rapidly morphed into the Economic Community and then the full-blown Union. And speaking of war, this was the headlines last night as I was going over my presentation. We're on the brink of war with Iran. Taiwan, the spark could start a U.S.-China World War III. Russia issues new doomsday nuclear World War III warning. I was just in India last year. India-Pakistan, nuclear-armed superpowers threatening to blow each other off the map. This could start anywhere. I don't think the globalists really care. As long as lots of people die and attitudes are sufficiently shaken, people say, please make it stop. I don't want my children to die. I'm tired of the grocery store being emptied. Can we just go back to normal? Global government, fine, whatever. Just let me watch my football, okay? Now, one of the key crises, everybody laughs when you see this guy. I think that's why they wheeled him off stage left last year, right? Poor guy. He was just too ridiculous. I'm sorry. I could just imagine God laughing, right? Anyways, the next climate, or the next crisis is just around the corner. Watch.
We know now that the next crisis is already waiting for us around the corner.
Yeah.
And it is the climate crisis.
Yeah, the climate crisis. I mean, the climate crisis. So I think a lot of Americans have gone back to sleep on this. Because, like, hey, Trump's in the White House. He just got us out of the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change. He just got us out of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. He just told the UN to its face that this was the biggest con job in the history of humanity, and it might very well be. So, hey, we don't have to worry about this stuff anymore, right? We just repealed the endangerment finding. The gas we exhale is no longer classified as pollution by our federal government. Praise God. So we don't have to worry about this anymore, right? Wrong. If you look at the agreement that came out of the COP30, again, I just flew back from the Amazon rainforest a few months ago. They came up with an agreement. The agreement says all governments in the world agreed, and the U.S. wasn't even there to object, so it passed by consensus. There's a carbon budget. Okay, there's a certain amount of carbon that our overlords think we are allowed to emit. And we have burned through 4/5 of that. This is right in the text of the agreement. Okay. Now, the United States has burned through more than its fair share of that carbon budget. And so most of that little fifth that's left is going to be allocated to China and to India and to South Africa and all the others. So you guys can just go die, right? Once you understand that you're the carbon they want to eliminate, it all makes sense. Okay. But so Gavin Newsom, I should have brought the video. Gavin Newsom flew down to the Amazon. You guys know, getting in his hair, right? Nice hair. So he flies down to the Amazon and he says, don't worry, guys. Trump is an invasive species. He's not a permanent fixture of American politics. He'll be gone in 3 years, so do your thing. We'll be right back. Yeah. And they know, like, we're the bitter clingers. They know that they're never going to get us. They've seen the polls. They know Americans don't believe their silly fake hypothesis. But they know that they have our children, and we'll talk about that. All over the world, including in this country, children are being brainwashed by a cult to believe that they need to drink this net zero Kool-Aid. So, and our leaders are saying this stuff openly, right? Here's John Kerry. I ran into him in Egypt once. It was very interesting.
So I think, personally, we're on the brink of needing to declare a climate emergency.
And there's that magic word, right? You say emergency, and suddenly there are no restraints on your power. You can do whatever you want because it's an emergency. And if you don't believe us, look what we did during COVID. See, the precedent is set. Nobody went to jail. We'll lock you in your house. We'll force you to inject mRNA concoctions that change the genetic code that God wrote for you. And if you don't like it, well, we'll call you a terrorist. We'll freeze your bank account. We'll fire you from your job. Okay. And now, that's only for health crises, right? That's only for COVIDs. Well, here's Al Gore.
As the WHO has long since declared, the climate crisis is now the biggest health threat facing humanity.
Don't! They got us. So I was in Azerbaijan last December 2024 for the UN Climate Conference there, and I got to see Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus, basically a minion of the Chinese Communist Party, former member of the Politburo for the Tigray People's Liberation Front, a mass-murdering ethno-Marxist terrorist group. Nice people they pick for these jobs. And here's what he had to say at the climate summit in Azerbaijan.
Climate change is the defining health challenge of our time.
Oh. And so I was like, wait, explain this to me, please. Make it make sense. How is climate change the biggest health crisis of our time? So I went to the World Health Organization's Director of Climate Change and Public Health, Dr. Nada, very nice lady. I'm sure she's very nice and personable. But here she is explaining to me why climate change is the biggest public health crisis of our time.
We've heard a lot, including from the Director General of the WHO, that climate change is a public health crisis. Could you explain to us how that works and what does that mean for policy?
What that means is that climate change represents a global warming, and global warming creates perfect conditions for certain diseases transmitted by mosquitoes.
Okay, sounds like Kamala Harris, right? Russia big, Ukraine small. Okay, now, it's hard not to laugh at this, all right? Before moving back to the United States, the last country I lived in was Sweden. Sweden is really cold, okay? It's up there by Alaska is how high north it is. If you ever go to the north of Sweden, you'll find mosquitoes the size of crows, okay? It's not funny, they're terrible. So explain to me exactly how global warming is going to lead to mosquitoes. I mean, like, really? If mosquitoes can live in the far north of Sweden, I'm pretty sure they don't need global warming to have mosquitoes. But this is why global warming is the biggest public health crisis of our time, okay? Because mosquitoes. In their words, that's their top expert on this. I'm not making this stuff up. If we had any real news outlets in this country, they'd be talking about this too. Okay. The World Bank says COVID-19 responses can help us fight climate change. Yeah, oh. Now, the folks in the U.S. Congress, the Uniparty, they are very well aware of what I'm telling you, right? You know, we all think that we won, climate change hoax is finished, thank you, Donald Trump. And to be clear, I'm very grateful for what Trump has done on the climate front. If I was designing his climate policies, I would have done exactly the same thing. Okay. But I ran into seven U.S. senators, this was on the Arabian Peninsula right before the election, and I asked them about the possibility of Trump being elected. And listen to what they said. Listen to what Senator Chris Coon had to say.
Alex Newman here with the New American Magazine. There was a poll released several months ago, AP North Center for Public Affairs Research found that less than half of Americans even believe that human activity is causing climate change. About a third are willing to pay even a single additional dollar on their electric bill each month to deal with climate change. And with the very real prospect of Trump coming back to the White House in 2024, how is the U.S. government planning to make credible commitments on funding and on these other issues that you guys are talking about?
Senator Coons, who chairs that committee?
That was part of why I spoke to what I think is both the structure of the Inflation Reduction Act, which has directed tens of billions of dollars already to construction projects in predominantly red states or politically conservative
states. They're bribing your politicians.
Into the way that we've been able to get
with
out
your money.
Of my subcommittee and pass through the full committee an additional $1.5 billion in investment in combating climate change, predominantly in the global south. With an overwhelming bipartisan margin. So am I suggesting that were the former president to be our next president, everything would be fine? Not at all. But I'm saying that there is a broad enough and deep enough support for continuing investments to combat climate change and for the Inflation Reduction Act and bipartisan infrastructure law in particular that we will continue. We'll continue to move forward regardless.
We're going to move forward regardless. We know you don't believe us. We know Trump might be the next president. We don't care. We've already bribed. You guys here in Texas, you see all these nasty windmills popping up all over the place. That's what he's talking about. They took tens of billions of your dollars. They lied to you. They said it was an Inflation Reduction Act. And I've got him on camera explaining how the biggest climate bill in history could be called the Inflation Reduction Act. If a business did that, it would be called fraud and they'd go to jail. But they're telling you, we bribed your Republican politicians. We've got all kinds of battery plants and solar panel farms and whatever in your Republican districts. You try to go against that, now your constituents are going to be real mad at you. Right? So we're going to move forward regardless. And they are. Last year, Donald Trump was the president, and the top UN court, that International Court of Justice, you remember, that all governments agreed to obey, they ruled that governments have an international legal obligation under international human rights law to combat the climate crisis with lots of intensity and vigor. Any government that fails to do this, they said, is committing an intentionally wrongful act and is violating the human rights of the people of the planet. Okay? This is what they said in their 500-page ruling. Now, is there any risk that that's going to be enforced on us while Trump is president? No, probably not, right? But they know that he's only president for 3 more years. Now, the International Court of Justice, they said this was putting the entire industrialized world on trial. The lawyer who prosecuted the case said that what they were asking for here was the court to recognize that the conduct which has already occurred That's us breathing. That's us powering our homes. That's us driving our cars. Has caused immense harm. It's unlawful and it must cease. Again, remember, you exhale about 2 pounds of carbon dioxide every single day. So let the implications of that sink in. And I think a lot of people hear that the world court is mad and they're like, come get us with your army, right? Well, and I'd be tempted to do that too. Let me show you, Rodrigo Duterte. He was the president of the Philippines. The only time he ever came across my desk, the only time I ever wrote about him was when he said, the UN is a joke. We should get out of the UN. What a ridiculous organization this is. You know where he's sitting right now? He's in a jail cell in The Hague, awaiting trial at the International Kangaroo Court. True story. In a jail cell right this moment. Okay. You know who they're also going after? Benjamin Netanyahu. You know who they're going to go after next? Donald Trump. There's literally an office right now in The Hague strategizing on what charges they're going to bring against Donald Trump when they have the opportunity. Now, they're not going to be able to get him for the next 3 years. Trump's the commander-in-chief of the U.S. military, right? Try it. But he's not going to be president forever. What do you think Barack Obama or Joe Biden or Gavin Newsom and his hair would say if the International Criminal Court said, hand over Donald Trump? Yes, sir. Here you go. Take his sons with you. Now, we are not a party to the Rome Statute that created these ridiculous tribunals. Neither is the state of Israel. And they're after Benjamin Netanyahu right now. They're after American soldiers right now. Okay? They also last year approved the first ever direct tax on humanity. This was done through a little-known agency called the International Maritime Organization. Now, thankfully, Trump told them to go kick rocks. He said, if you try to enforce that, we will sanction you and we're not going to pay it. But they said all international shipping must pay a tax directly to the United Nations. They said shipping is responsible for 3% of global emissions, and therefore it's an emergency, therefore you must pay us money. They expected to raise $100 billion per year. Okay, and this was approved. Now, it's not going to be enforced right now because Trump told them again to go kick rocks. But he's not going to be president forever. And if they can do this for 3% of global emissions, which is what international shipping represents, what do you think they can do to farming, which they say represents 30% of global emissions? What do you think they can do to air travel, electricity generation? You see where they're going with this? Okay. Even before the global warming hoax was a thing, the people behind the global warming hoax were talking about what they wanted. This is John Holdren, Obama's science czar. True story. 1977, he wrote a book called Eco-Science. And he said we had an ecological crisis and we needed a planetary regime with an international armed force to control humanity and resources. He proposed forced abortions. He proposed putting sterilizing agents in the water supply to make sure you could not have children without permission from your overlords. Early 1970s, the UN met in Vancouver. They came up with the human settlements issues and the Vancouver Declaration. They said land cannot be treated as an ordinary asset controlled by individuals. Private land ownership, they said, is a principal instrument of accumulation and concentration of wealth, and therefore it contributes to social injustice. Therefore, public control of land use is indispensable. Chairman Mao, pick up the red phone, please. Okay. I mean, we've seen this movie before. Cuba, China, Vietnam, Mozambique, Angola, Soviet Union, you name it, and it always ends the same. Starvation, environmental destruction, gulags, torture, mass murder. Why are the nations and the governments of the world signing up for this nonsense, right? So going back to this Agenda 2030, which, by the way, climate change and sustainable development is a key part of it, I mentioned the three legs of the stool. We talked about governments. Well, the World Economic Forum is handling the business side of this, right? In 2019, they signed a strategic partnership with the World Economic Forum. Here's the UN's press release. You see it right there. Mr. Schwabe and Antonio Guterres looking over the shoulders of their minions. Here's the World Economic Forum's press release about it. And they've been admitting what they're doing. Here's Cristiana Figueres. For the first time, we're transforming the economy of the world using climate as the excuse. Larry Fink, the new co-chair of the World Economic Forum, also the head of BlackRock with $10 trillion under management, biggest asset manager in the world. They're forcing behavior change.
You now make a point of that's an investment criteria for you.
Well, behaviors are going to have to change, and this is one thing we're asking companies. You have to force behaviors.
Oh, they will. They will. Right? As Obama was leaving, they were coming up with new SEC rules that would force not just public companies to disclose their climate emissions, but all their suppliers, all their distributors, everyone. So you think, oh, I work for a small little family-run business. Oh, they're coming for you too. Okay? Oh, I have a family farm. Yeah, you're going to have to start reporting your CO2 emissions if you want to sell to anybody who sells to a public company. Now, this just happened a couple weeks ago. What is the economy going to look like once these totalitarians are done? Well, you might recognize him, Mark Carney, key globalist, been a bigwig at the World Economic Forum. He's now the Prime Minister of the People's Republic of Canada stand. Before that, he was the central banker for England and then Canada. Here he is on where this is going.
And I believe the progress that we have made in the partnership sets us up well for the new world order.
Yeah. His partnership with the most murderous dictatorship in the history of humanity sets them up well for the new world order. Okay, Klaus Schwab also, China's like a role model for this.
I respect China's achievements, which are tremendous over the last over 40 years since the opening up and policy and reform policy came into action. I think it's a role model for many countries.
Yeah, the most murderous dictatorship in the history of humanity. Ruthless persecutors of Christians. It's a role model for many countries. George Soros puts more money into our political process than just about anybody in history.
So I think you need a new world order that China has to be part of the process of creating it. And they have to buy in. They have to own it the same way as, let's say, the United States owns the Washington Consensus, the current order.
Yeah, so the most murderous regime in history should own the new world order. And it really hit me. I was in Paris for the UN Climate Summit where they came up with the Paris Agreement. And, you know, Barack Obama's prancing around like Santa Claus on crystal meth, like handing out goodies. A trillion for you, a trillion for you. We're going to shut down all our industries over here. And then the communist Chinese show up and like, yeah, we're going to keep increasing our CO2 emissions until like at least 2030 or something. And thank you, by the way, Mr. Obama, for slashing your country's CO2 emissions by 30% in 10 years. This chart you see right here, that blue line, that's the CO2 emissions of the slaves of the mass-murdering communist Chinese regime. Notice they're skyrocketing. They're about 300% of what America emits right now. The intensity of CO2 emissions for every unit of economic production in China is twice what it is in the United States. So if you truly believed that carbon dioxide was bad for the planet, that it was going to cause a climate crisis, this would be the worst possible thing you could do. Shut down industry in America, shut down our factories, shut down our power, and ship all our jobs to China. It'd be the worst possible thing you could do if you really believed CO2 was bad for the planet. And yet it's exactly what they did. And then they celebrated how they were saving the world. See, the issue is never the issue with these people, as they used to say back in the 70s. The issue is always the revolution. Okay? Communist China bragged after the 2030 agenda was ratified. They said, we played a crucial role in developing it. And if you read it, it's kind of obvious, right? Goal number 10, we're going to redistribute your wealth around the world. They say right in the foreword, we commit to making fundamental changes to the way that our societies produce and consume goods. That sounds a lot like Karl Marx, right? How are they going to change the way we produce and consume goods? Well, by having the government control the production and consumption of goods. Global healthcare. They're building what they call digital public infrastructure. Since I've only got 15 or 20 minutes left, I think we're going to skip digital, the section on what they're doing with the digital gulag. You might like this. This is the Prime Minister of the UK.
Today, I am announcing this government will make a new free-of-charge digital ID mandatory for the right to work.
But it's free of
by
charge.
By the end of this parliament. Let me spell that out. You will not be able to work in the United Kingdom if you do not have digital ID.
There you go.
It's as simple as that.
Simple as that. Okay, the European Union doing the same thing. And they're building what they call the International Blockchain Ledger, where every asset in the known universe is going to become a digital token. It will live on this International Blockchain Ledger. And if you want to buy or sell, you'll need your digital ID and your digital currency and your digital contract. So it'll all be trackable. It'll all be controlled. And again, we're going to skip most of this. But here is, again, Larry Fink at this year's World Economic Summit.
I think the movement towards tokenization, decimalization is necessary. It's ironic that we see two emerging countries leading the world in
So we got to keep doing it, right? And of course, you're all thinking of Revelation chapter 13 right now. Causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads that no man might buy or sell, save he that had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Right? And again, 2,000 years ago, I'm sure that sounded quite silly. Today, we're like literally watching the architecture being built. Like this is now feasible for the first time in human history. Okay. And it's coming. Ultimately, they're going for transhumanism, and I know there's some other speakers who are going to address this today, so I won't spend much time on it, but Elon Musk.
This will be a slow process where we will gradually increase the issues that we solve until ultimately we can do a full brain-machine interface, meaning that we can ultimately... Yeah, this is going to sound pretty weird, but achieve a sort of symbiosis with artificial intelligence. So but this is not a mandatory thing. This is a thing that you can choose to have if you want. This is something I think is going to be really important at a civilization level scale. So, I've said a lot about AI over the years. But I think even in a benign AI scenario, we will be left behind. And hopefully it is a benign scenario. But I think with a high bandwidth brain machine interface, I think we can actually go along for the ride. And we can effectively have the option of merging with AI.
We shall be as gods, right? We'll have immortality by uploading our consciousness to the Borg, and yeah, isn't that going to be great? Now, the genetic editing coming at us like a freight train, right?
You see, the difference of this forced industrial revolution is it doesn't change what you are doing. It changes you if you take a genetic editing, right. Just as an example. It's you.
Yeah, so this is happening, right? They've got the technology now. Jennifer Doudna, the co-inventor of the CRISPR technology to manipulate the genome, says we have unlocked the secret of creation. We can now control evolution itself. And yes, they have already deployed this. Bill Gates of hell.
One final way that's new and is promising is called the RNA vaccine. With RNA and DNA, instead of putting that shape in, you put instructions in the code to make that shape.
Yeah, what could go wrong, right? Now, I've been digging into the Epstein files for 2 weeks now, and this is at the core of what he was doing. None of the fake media is talking about it. He was obsessed with the genetic engineering and the transhumanism. He had people in Harvard, UCLA, Arizona State University, is a big hub of this, where Michael Crow, the head of the intelligence community's investment arm, is located. This is what he was doing. Designer babies, human cloning, genetic engineering, eugenics. So we don't have time to get into all this today, but suffice it to say, the technology's here. They've already deployed it. Here's Dr. Peter McCullough.
There's been a paper published from Malmo, Sweden. Senior author is Yang D. Morenis, that showed that the genetic code for Pfizer gets installed into the human nucleus of a hepatoma cell line very rapidly, within a few hours. And experts believe the entire code is actually installed into the human genome. This paper has not been challenged by any other lab. We're looking for confirmation, but this is disturbing now. Since the messenger RNA for Pfizer, in a study done by Stanford, by Rokin and colleagues, is permanently in the lymph nodes, at least as far as they've looked for several months now. So the genetic code, once people take these vaccines, is long-lasting. It may indeed get into the nucleus, change the human genome, and then pass down to daughter cells. That means that this could actually be passed down to the progeny of vaccinated young parents. There couldn't be worse news right now. We are hoping this vaccine...
And by the way, again, this is exactly what Epstein was involved in. Okay, they were figuring out how to make these things pass on from generation to generation, the genetic engineering that they're doing. It's crazy. Now, we'll leave that behind for a moment. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize that there's an interim step between where we're at and the global tyrannical system that they're in the process of building. And that is the regional orders, I believe, that we are seeing emerge now very, very rapidly. Revelation 17 says the 10 horns that you saw are 10 kings who've not yet received royal power, but they are to receive authority as kings for 1 hour together with the beast. It goes on to say these are of one mind and they hand over their power and authority to the beast. Okay, Daniel chapter 7, which Andy mentioned earlier, also has a parallel passage that deals with these 10 kings. Now, I'm not going to tell you it's definitively these regional governments that are emerging, but it sure looks like a plausible candidate to me. You've got the European Union, you've got the African Union, Vladimir Putin's building the Eurasian Union. These things are popping up all over the world, and depending on, you know, which time you look at, there's about 10 of them at any given time, okay? Lincoln Bloomfield, we mentioned him earlier, his report, A World Effectively Controlled by the United Nations, says there's an interim step before we get there. He says we need ever larger units evolving through customs unions, confederation, and regionalism until the larger units coalesce under a global umbrella. Henry Kissinger, who recruited Klaus Schwab, who worked for David Rockefeller, who went to go meet his maker a few years ago. Can't imagine that went very well for him. But here's what he said in his book, World Order, in 2014. He said, the contemporary quest for world order, or world government, will require a coherent strategy to establish a concept of order within the various regions, so regional governments, and to relate these regional orders to one another. It's exactly what we see. Klaus Schwab, in his book on the Great Reset, says, people are mad about globalism. That's okay. We have an in-between solution. Regionalization. He says the European Union is the model for this. He says even in North America, we're building one, right? Here's the CEO of the Atlantic Council describing this as like some kind of observer, even though he's helping to engineer
China,
this.
I think in 2016-17, invested $53 billion in the United States. Last year, $1 billion. So there's already a decoupling. There's already a breaking down. And the question is, how does this play out right now? And so I think you're going to see, in an economic sense, you're going to see these two worlds, but it's not going to be that neat. I think you're going to see the evolution of regional organizations, and regional, because it's so hard to create a world order, I think you're going to see regional orders spring up. And then you have links between regional orders, but they will be very much guided by economic interests, social interests, and also...
There you go. Right. By the way, they were at the World Government Summit. Yes, it's really called that. Okay, it's on the Arabian Peninsula. Here's the IMF. We need to make the best of the new multipolar world order. I believe this is the phase that we're in right now. We're watching the controlled demolition of the unipolar world order, and I've been forecasting this for 15 years because I read their publications. I know what they're saying. They're going to bring down the unipolar world order led and dominated by the hegemonic United States and replace it with a multipolar world order where Brussels, representing the European Union, and Beijing and other powers come to the fore. BRICS, of course, each one of those governments is kind of the anchor in its respective regional union. And they've been talking about this, right? Very openly. Here's the head of the EU Parliament. We're not going to have time to watch him, but EU foreign minister talking about this. Here you see some of the regional orders that are emerging, right? Here's they teach this in almost any international politics class that you take in any university. The five levels of integration starts with free trade, ends with political union like we have in Europe. And it's happening here. In fact, it's accelerating here. Again, a lot of people think Trump is you know, bringing us a pause in all this, and in some ways he is, but the USMCA was negotiated by the Trump administration in his first term. And now it's up for review, and instead of reining it in, they've got international tribunals that claim to have the power to overrule our state legislatures, our courts. Instead of reining all that in, they're talking about doubling down. They're talking about creating a common customs union. They're saying, oh, the Chinese are shipping stuff to Mexico or Canada to avoid our tariffs, so let's create a North American perimeter where we all have one border and then stuff can move freely among the three. It's exactly how they got the European Union. Okay. If you read the WikiLeaks disclosures back from over a decade ago, the Bush administration was plotting this. They were talking about a North American currency and a North American parliament. Here's the technocrats' vision for a North American technate. Right? Now, I want to spend a few minutes on the religious push. We talked about the political leg of the stool, the business leg of the stool. Let's talk for a moment about the religious angle. This is a UN program.
85% of the world population believe in a faith or a religion. And the power of that is humongous. And we can harness that in mobilizing faith leaders and faith followers in protecting Earth.
We're going to harness your religion to save the climate. Okay. Here's their website. The goal of Faith for Earth is strategically engage with faith-based organizations to bring about, to collectively achieve the Sustainable Development Goals, the 2030 Agenda. Okay. Now, the main organization leading this charge is called Religions for Peace, funded by the State Department, George Soros, the Rockefellers, the UN, you name it. And I ran into the lady who was running it at the time in Egypt just a few years ago. Here she is explaining what these people are up to.
My name is Azza Karam.
Can we turn the volume up,
and
guys,
I
just
have
a little bit?
The privilege and the responsibility of serving a worldwide movement of interreligious institutions, organizations called Religions for Peace. In case you do not know it, we think of it as the United Nations of Religions. The United Nations has member states or governments. Religions for Peace has member religious institutions. All religious institutions
all
representing
religious institutions.
All the religions
representing all religions. I called up my pastor. Jeff, are we part of Religions for Peace? Well, no, Alex, I never heard of that. See, they have a way around this. If you don't agree with them, if you won't jump on the bandwagon, you're a cult, you're a sect, you're an extremist, you're a radical, and therefore you're not a legitimate religion. Because all legitimate religions are in support of this one world effort to bring all the religions together. They actually got together in 2019, and they said, we commit to human development as set forth in the Sustainable Development Goals. They're telling you to your face what they're doing. Okay. Now, I ran into this prophecy expert, the head of the UN Environment Program, just a couple years ago in Azerbaijan. His name is Eric Solheim, literally the head of the UN's EPA, and he had some really insightful stuff on why we as Christians need to participate. He's got a good understanding of prophecy. Listen.
And so what do you see the role of pastors and priests and bishops and imams in getting their congregations involved in the fight for a sustainable world?
I'm not aware of any religion where nature is not front and center. I mean, look, in the Bible, it starts with God creating this wonderful, beautiful world. After 7 days, he's so happy with what he has created that he takes a day off to celebrate. And the Bible ends with John sitting in at a Greek island with a great vision of a flood. So nature's front.
Andy, maybe we can invite him to the next Prof Con. The Bible ends with a vision of John on an island and a great global flood. I think he's got it backwards. So. In fact, God promised no more global floods, right? Anyways, that's the guy who says all of the religions of the world need to join because your Bible says so. Right? Clearly, he knows what he's talking about. So they put out reports. We need a new system of morality. It's very clear now. I got off the plane in Egypt and I saw this. Why should I be allowed into the Egyptian afterlife? Well, I have not polluted the water or the earth. Right? Your sin is not your idolatry, your hate, your murder, your stealing, your adultery, your fornication. No, your sin is your carbon footprint. Okay? And so actually at the summit, they walked up to the top of Mount Sinai, or what they say is Mount Sinai, and they unveiled the new and supposedly improved Ten Commandments. Okay? Truly incredible. The new Ten Commandments include, creation is not our possession. We have a responsibility to love nature. We must serve this life-giving earth. And sorry, the earth did not give me life. The earth is a rock. God gave me life. My parents gave me life, not Mother Earth. We need to repent. We need to feel the pain of the earth. Okay, these are our new Ten Commandments. And I interviewed one of the ringleaders of this thing. His name is James Sternlicht, CEO of the Peace Department. And listen to what he said.
All religions teach us to respect the creation that we have been given. And we've done kind of a terrible job of that. And so with a new kind of Ten Commandments of climate change, which are an addendum to, not a replacement for, the original Ten Commandments, and a third covenant that we're some kind of working on between mankind and creation, that we would refocus on those elements of the teachings from across religions that point us in the direction of fixing the problems that we've created so that life can thrive on this planet and so that we can build that proverbial kingdom of heaven here on earth.
So there you heard it. Nothing to see here, folks. God gave us the original Ten Commandments. The UN and Friends has the new and improved Ten Commandments. God gave us the old covenant and the new covenant. The UN and Friends is now working on the third covenant that we're going to use to build the kingdom of heaven here on earth. What could go wrong? So that was my 5-minute timer. So here's the Pope blessing a big block of ice. You should see the memes, right, with the Pope blessing ice, illegal immigration. It's hilarious. The Pope is not a fan of the ICE enforcement, obviously. So this was the leader of the Laudato Si movement at the latest climate summit explaining why all the religions of the world need to come together. The paganism's in your face. They're brainwashing your children in the most demonic way possible. But we're just going to go right to the end. And I hope you'll get some of our resources just so you can learn more of what I'm talking about. Like, I can't urge you strongly enough to protect your children and your grandchildren. That's the main mechanism that they're using right now, is the indoctrination of billions of children in government brainwash camps masquerading as schools. They're teaching them lies from the pit of hell, and I mean that in the most serious sense possible. You know, we homeschool our children with Classical Conversations. They say the purpose of education is to know God and make Him known. For almost 2,000 years, Christians understood that. Now we think the purpose of education is to get a good job so you can earn lots of money and, you know, retire in Florida or something, right? A lot of our climate coverage you'll find in The New American. Those are some of our cover stories. Our newsletter, absolutely free, libertysentinel.org, if you want to stay on top of all the kind of stuff that we're putting out there. It's amazing to me how what's happening in the world lines up so perfectly with what Scripture tells us we should be expecting. And so, you know, I love doing that, and you're welcome to sign up and get access to that. And so I just want to end with some more verses from the Word of God. We started with Psalm 2, and I want to come back to it. We read about the kings of the earth, the rulers conspiring against God and His anointed. God's laughing at them, going to speak to them in His wrath. And starting in verse 6, David writes 3,000 years ago, I will declare the decree the Lord has said unto me, Thou art my son, this day have I begotten thee. Ask of me, and I shall give thee the heathen for thine inheritance, and the uttermost parts of the earth for thy possession. Thou shalt break them with a rod of iron. Thou shalt dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. We're going to see what that looks like. Now, therefore, O kings, be wise. I just like, I want to shout this to these guys at the UN. Like, they don't know what they're doing. They're so blind. Kings, be wise. Be warned, O rulers of the earth. Serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. Kiss the Son, lest He be angry and you perish in the way, for His wrath is quickly kindled. Blessed are all who take refuge in Him. Like, I should just print this on my shirt next time I go to the UN, but I'm sure they'll kick me out, right? But I mean, that's a clear warning. Like, all those in authority, presidents, kings, potentates, dictators, sultans, whatever, governors, pay attention. Okay. Now, the Bible tells us that the God of this world, it's a reference to Satan here, has blinded the minds of them which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine unto them. I mentioned 1 John chapter 5. We know we are from God, but the whole world lies in the power of the evil one. And so we need to proclaim the gospel. We need to share God's love with these people who are lost, who are have been taken captive as slaves to do Satan's will, is what the Bible teaches. We know where this is going, right? Satan and his angels are going to the lake of fire forever. Revelation 20 says, the devil that deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone where the beast and the false prophet are, and shall be tormented day and night forever and ever. How can these people not see that? That's where they're going to end up if they don't stop this foolishness right now. And we know that. We have an obligation to share that with them. So we'll end with Revelation chapter 19. I saw heaven open, and behold, a white horse. Notice there's no flood here, right? And he that sat upon him was called faithful and true, and in righteousness he doth judge and make war. His eyes were as a flame of fire, and on his head were many crowns. And he had a name written that no man knew but he himself. And he was clothed with a vesture dipped in blood, and his name is called the Word of God. This is our Lord, our Savior, our King. It says, and the armies which were in heaven followed him upon white horses, clothed in fine linen, white and clean. And out of his mouth goeth a sharp sword, that with it he should smite the nations. He shall rule over them with a rod of iron. That's what's coming, ladies and gentlemen. That's where all this is going to end. Let's not lose sight of that. Yes, the globalists, their little new world order, God's laughing at them. It's going to end like this. And there are a lot of people who are going to end up there. So we have an obligation to share this. God's already won the victory, guys. We're just here for the ride. So God bless you guys. Thank you so much.